at least I've encountered an application is that we can use embed this service code in fault-tolerant one-way quantum computation, like in cluster states, and using some measurement patterns. So there are places where it's necessary. And theoretically, it gives us some example of anions. And there's a poster outside which talks about anions. So for, you know, it could be potentially interesting for that reason. And just for me, it's mathematically kind of nice. So first, I will construct the toric code, tell you what the stabilizer generators are and everything. And so we have first, this is a plus one. We arrange the qubits on the edges of this lattice. And this is a 6x6 lattice counting, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and like this. The boundary are periodic. So this qubit is the same as that. So, well, a lattice of qubits on the edges. Yeah, so you have qubits here, you know, this kind of lattice. Vertex, we will talk about, it corresponds to some check operators, which I will define that are kind of stabilizing this code. And physically, just have lots of qubits, but they satisfy relations. They're eigenstates of the following eigen equations. So plus one eigenstates of these operators. So colors, purple and green. So you will have the kind of x at each site. You were asking about what's happening at the site. You have it's a plus one eigenstate of an operator, which if you measure this operator, x on all these four qubits, then you're going to get the state back. You always get plus one, as your outcome, and the state, of course, doesn't change. And this you can define this operator on every site, and it's satisfied. It's a plus one eigenstate of all these kind of operators. And then you also have the Z operators, the Plaquette operators, they call. So that means you use Z now. So it's kind of, you can see some, it will become a CSS code, so you correct, you know, X type of error and Z type of error. But you have them in this arrangement. Instead of having the crosses, you can associate these Plaquette operators with the center of the Plaquette, or with the Plaquette itself. And this is called the site operators. And so how many of them do we have? So let's count. I assume you're familiar with stabilizer code. Who are familiar with stabilizer code? Okay. So I'll just talk about. I'm claiming that this is two L squared. That's the many physical qubits and two, and this is L code. There are L times L horizontal edges, so L times L horizontal qubits. And then also L times L vertical ones. So you have two L squared, that's the number of physical qubits you have. And how many of these kind of things we have? It seems like there are L times L sites. So this lattice, in the physical implementation, so one of them will be an unlocal, right, the measurements, because you need to take into this account, this qubit into account, and this one, if you arrange them on a plane. So a more practical thing would be to use a planar code. It's easier to do in the lab. But so you can also think about the lattice lying on this torus and stuff like that. So either way you like. But here we have L times L sites and also L times L plaquettes. But we get a 2 here. Can you tell me why? I assume you're familiar with the fact that the number of the number of encoded qubits equal the number of physical qubits subtract the number of independent stabilizer generators. Could anyone tell me why there is two remaining? Ten more seconds. Okay. Don't accuse me if I didn't give you enough time. So the two comes from the fact that, you know, if you have any single generator, this say take this site stabilizer. Site check operator, then you're going to, this can be expressed as the product of all the other site operators. So not all those L square site operators are independent. There's only L square minus one independent ones. That's mainly because each edge has two endpoints. It's attached to two vertices. So if you apply all of the site operators, that means you've applied x on any particular edge twice, and x squares the identity. Is it clear to everyone? Kind of. So if you apply all the site operators, you're going to get the identity. So one of them, I mean, you know, the independent set will be L squared minus 1, has cardinality L squared minus 1. And same with the plaquette. And just because of this boundary condition, everything, you know, there's no boundary. So, I mean, on a torus, there's no boundary. So every edge is next to, is adjacent by two plaquettes. And same thing apply because it's modulo 2, everything. So you apply Z twice, you get identity back. And so that's how we get the two. Ah, okay, question? This is up to you. Well, you put them like this. So, okay, see, I wasn't so concerned about this, but what if you do it, what, can you do it on the ion trap? So, I mean, one way, I know at least I looked at, you might be able to have them in place. So one way I know, so is people were proposing that to use ion trap to do this. Nothing can scale. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's implemented, I don't know. But people are talking about at least doing the clusters, implementing large clusters or small clusters. And in that, if Rosendahl's paper would measure certain qubits, and then at the end you're left with basically surface code encoding. Just measure them, like, you know. So if you have, like here this is, you know, not exactly the lattice a bit like this, but I think you just, you start with a cluster state that's like twice as dense, and but you can arrange it differently. That's just because that's just for convenient representation, like the edge relations. Because okay, so if you they're on this, I mean, they are if they're on the vertices, then the incidence relation is 4, right? And it does not correspond to x squared equals what? I mean, it's nice because edges are nice because there are two endpoints and also two plaquettes next to them. And somehow just, you know, whereas this, the incidence relation is different if you're using vertexes because there are four things coming in and you somehow have to deal with that and it's not does not correspond to the structure we want. Physically, just a measurement on this kind of qubit. So, you know, so a site operator is an operator that has acting on 1, 2, 3, 4, this kind of qubit. And actually, they're not that much different, right? If you light them on like this, then so you either act on these four, or I mean, I will use a different color. You act on this four. Or this four, they're actually not that much different. So that's why later I will talk about a duality transformation, which easily takes one into the other. So they're just acting on So and here you act on this one. So kind of odd, and you know, they're just taking it into account. Well, they're different because X and Z, but. So the vertices, well, so because it's plus one eigenstate of these things, so they have to satisfy correlations, right? So if you measure x, and x on that, there has to be, you know, you can probabilistically get some minus ones or something, because they're not exactly eigenstate of separate things. But if you get minus one, then there must be another minus one somewhere, because the whole thing is the plus one eigenstate. So it kind of also captures the correlations, you know, the entanglement there. I don't, it's not the topic of, sorry? Well, like I was saying, yeah, I was saying you can do it on a cluster state. So you can start by doing control phase and prepare these in plus states. And then doing control phase amounts all the adjacent one. There will be another one here. Except then after you create the cluster state, you can measure this in Z base and remove it. And maybe some place might need to be measured in some. Well, I think if you measure in, yeah, Z basis, so you're left with this basically just the code we want. Not really. So why don't you start with filling in everything with this? You can come up with a twice, you know, much like a smaller lattice, half the size. I mean, density, twice as dense. And then you're going to do, so you start put them all in plus states. And then you apply phase gate between neighboring ones. And then you measure all these ones in Zs, I believe. Or maybe some in X, so there's a measurement pattern. But I forgot, but so it does capture some quantum entanglement, but it's not that exactly that. So I would say that it's easier to describe as eigenstate of these operators. I'm not particularly so concerned about implementation at this point, so.
Yeah, but I can't understand.
All right, so. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I don't know how to, sorry. Well, I'll keep. No, just there's nothing tricky about it. It just says that, all it says is, this geometrically representing the operation. So you have qubits, you know, on almost on lattice, I mean, or some kind of lattice. And then you just have things that act on this group and this group. You just a grouping, and it kind of corresponds to this, you know, graph like nicely. It's, No, I thought I described a bit one way of preparing it, but there are probably better ways. So, I mean, I don't know implementation much. So, sorry, I'll keep going. Sorry, let me just keep going for now. You can complain to me later. So I have these constructions. So these are commuting operators we can check to make it, they make them stable as a generator. They need to be a building group so that there's actually a state that simultaneously to satisfy all these eigenequations, right? And you can see that, of course, trivially, the Z type commutes with all the Z types, and X type commutes with X because IX is X, you know, there's nothing about it. So the trick, you just have to compare these ones. And if they act on different qubits, different sets of qubits, apparently they will commute. So what if you move this placket operator to here? I mean, do these two operators commute? The answer is yes, because X anti-commute with Z, like if you move it up, X anti-commute with this Z, and this X will anti-commute with that Z. And two anti-commutation just cancel out. So at the end, they 2 minus 1, you get 1. So all these kind of generators will commute. And the distance of course is L. But maybe we'll save it to later, you know, when I've actually written down a little more about the syndromes and stuff. But I can tell you briefly what, I can tell you, claim to you what the logical operations are. but I will justify later. So you can have, there are four logical independent of logical operations because there are two qubits. So we'll have the logical x on the first qubit, the logical, say, the logical x on the first qubit, let's say, is like this. Sorry. And then you have the logical x on the first qubit. They will be like this. Oh, this x meaning these are all x's. And these are all z's. I think I'm getting confusing. These are our z's, actually. Let's just use this one. And the same thing happens if you wrap around the other side. So you can see that these two anti-commutes because, this is just one of them. Okay, let's choose them as our logical ones. And then say this anti-commute because x commutes with z. So it kind of, you know, so far it looks good. That's for one qubit. And the other way, it just exchange. You have the z, x, z going this way and x going that way. But let's see. Now, how do we measure? How do we do the syndrome measurements? And I mean, how do we deal with syndromes? So you realize if you have an error somewhere, if you have an z error on this qubit, with let's see what's going to happen. If you have an x z, you have a question? Sure. Sorry, what's the question? Oh, it's the first logical qubit. No, it's not. Well, it's really hard. They're not localized, the qubits. The logical qubit is kind of spread out in the entanglement. So it's not localized. It's here. You can equally as well take, you know, make the x go this way or zigzag through your way. As long as you wrap around once. So basically, I can actually explain it on this torus. So the x operator, the z on the first operator could be like this, right? It's kind of applying z all along one of the wrap around the torus once in one of the dimensions. And the other one would be dx. Dx will be like things like applying along the other dimension, going like. I'll use just dotted line to represent the acting on that kind of qubits. Which one? Which line? This one? Yeah, local Zs. They correspond to the logical Z on the first qubit, logical qubit. Which both? You mean this and this? Or? So, this one, local Z on all this is one logical operation, and this is a different one. Sorry. And so if you have a local error, local Z here, that it's going to anti-commute with the Plaquette operator, the site operator here and here because they are x's and x anti-commute with Z. So we see that they're anti-commuting. So that means that when we measure the syndrome, you know, this still, you know, just going to change. I will remind you that the stabilizer after you apply some kind of a unitary operation on the system is you conjugate by U, right? So all the generators get conjugated. But if you conjugate if you conjugate any other stabilizer generator acting on different qubits or that commutes, you just get the same thing, the same generator back. But if you conjugate one that anti-commutes, you're going to get minus sign in the front. So that means if you now measure XX here, it's going to get a minus one as your measurement outcome. And so we know that it's not in our code space. And now we'll try to correct it. And both the endpoints will show up as that. And so now, if you the endpoint, you have a longer error chain. So if it extends, keep going like this, no matter how it goes, the site operator here won't get affected because there are two anti-commuting relations here, so they cancel out. And then, so this is 2 plus 1, you don't see it at all. You only see the endpoints where the minus 1 syndrome shows up. So this minus 1, so like kind of your light bulb lighting up at the endpoints. All we have after measuring some all these things, we're going to have pairs of endpoints, which we'll call them defects. So let's say that our measurements now is perfect. All right, my measurements are perfect. So I call these things defects, and we see lots of them, or you know, maybe, but they should. If measurements are perfect, we should have an even number of them, because each error chain has two endpoints, or else it can be like this, or it can wrap around itself. I mean, I don't know, like this, in which case you won't see anything. I mean, just possibly you can draw chains like this. And so that's why endpoints should show up in pairs, and you'll see pairs of defects. But so now, I mean, I was saying, well, you can ask me about this later. I'm just focusing on Z air. But if you ask me why I'm only looking at Z, you could, because we're kind of short of time. But let's just see how you would do recovery with how we're going to deal with these. At least in the first case, let's just consider a single pair of defects. And we can see that we assume the error model is such that it has like probabilistic, and it's, you know, there's some probability, small p, probability that there will be a Z error here on each qubit. I mean, any qubit, given any qubit, there's a small probability of error. And then they are uncorrelated and independent, so nice in some way. And so we have the probability of having, so a particular chain of, say, length 2 or length M will be given by P to the M, so the power, so having M errors, and 1 minus P to the N minus M, so that many having no errors, so that for a particular chain. And here is our N. And the M is just the length of the chain. So we can see that we can always write this. We can rewrite this as 1 minus P, M, and 1 minus P to the N. So all I'm saying, this part is the same for all chains. So given any chain, this particular chain having probability error, if you fix the endpoint, or just in general. So it's proportional to this thing. So it's going to be exponentially suppressed by the length of the chain. So we also want shorter chains. So that if we were to make a best guess, we'll guess the shorter chains. For example, if we have these two syndromes, we'll guess this one instead of, say, this one, and even more, we won't choose that one that goes to the top and come back from the bottom. Remember, we have periodic boundary condition. Do you have questions? Stop me. I mean, I'm probably not going to go through the whole thing because I'll just have whatever time permits, but I want you to understand what I'm saying here. No questions? All right. So furthermore, well, I want to say recovery is possible as long as we have. Is that a question? Okay, if we have, as long as we have one shortest chain. So say now the syndrome is not here, but here. Then, so there are more than one way of having shortest chains. So we can either have things like going this way. This is length 3, connecting them. So we only have a single pair. We know they're going to pair up. It's just how to pair them up. And or you can go like this way. Let me just pick a different one so I can draw easily. So you can go this way or that way. But at the end, it doesn't matter which one you choose, the state you get back at the end is the same because the cold space is a special subspace that's stabilized by the difference. So maybe I should be a bit slower. So if you call this air chain, so given that we know the syndrome, that's all we know. We don't know what the air is. But let's call this E1, and let's say compare if we guess E1 and correct the E1, how would it differ from if an air E1 actually occur on a chain instead of E2, how is it going to affect our state if we guess it wrong? And just to mention, the whole thing about fault tolerance is that we need to identify, carefully choose, determine what kind of errors we have, and that's kind of the most important thing, and not just go ahead and correct whatever we think it might be and cause even more error than we started with. So let's denote the original state by psi, which is the thing that's stabilized in the cold space. And we have, so after this time step when the air accumulates, we either have E1 psi or E2 psi. Oh, no, not yet. But I want to say that they are equal. But they are equal if and only if E1 minus inverse E2 on psi is basically in the stabilizer, right? And here, E1 inverse, because everything, if you raise to power 2, you get the identity. So inverse is just the thing itself. So I'm basically looking at, if this were in the stabilizer, then we're fine. And that means if these are correspond to Zs, can you see why that's in the stabilizer? Sorry. Sure. Yeah. They're heavily suppressive with P is very small. So we will not, in the recovery, if we have to make one guess, we're going to make the one that's most likely. And at the end, of course, I mean, that thing does not tell you us enough. It depends on how many long paths there are. If there are like tons more long paths, we might still end up better off picking long paths. But in this case, it's better to pick short paths. So here, this is in the stabilizer because this is this operator, this Plaquette operator, composed times this Plaquette operator. And here the 2z cancel out, so you're only left with a bigger boundary. So a nice thing about these things is that, you know, all these have nice relations. So if you have things enclosing the surface, this is a boundary of something. Like, that's why a natural language to talk about this would be homology, where you talk about chains and the boundary of chains, if you're interested in the more general setting. But here I skipped those technical stuff or words. And on the dual lattice similarly, you can correct for all the X errors, and they're independent, so at the end we'll be able to correct all the poly errors. And by measuring these generators, we're basically projecting our errors into the poly. So now, I think I'm doing pretty bad with time. But remind me, give me a deadline. Finch. Sorry? Really? Okay. All right. So now everyone kind of understand what's going on here. So the goal is to pick a shortest chain connecting two things. And in most cases, this is an ambiguous determination. I mean, it doesn't matter which. So as long as they're not, like, say if you have an even size thing, and you have one syndrome here. Let's say, yeah. So if you have one syndrome here, one syndrome here, you're going to run into a bit of trouble because you don't know this is exactly the same length as the other one. But that's the only case where you run into trouble. As long as it's not half the length of the lattice, it's obvious which homologies, you know, which one chain of a certain homology to choose. Okay, so I mean, all I don't want is that if it wraps around the torus and comes back, that's basically our logical operation. That's what I want to avoid. But as long as it doesn't wrap around, all these things are just going to be equivalent in the stabilizer. So the difficulty is to be the same, but that's kind of trivial, and we can always make our lattice, I guess, odd numbers or something. But we won't worry too much about that. But we just need to choose one minimum length path if we have just a single pair. But a complication is that we might have more than one pair, right? So the chain might, this one chain might not be have a single connected component. You can have bits here and, you know, I don't know, whoops, bits there, and it gives you other syndromes, and say some kind of two ends, some even number syndromes. And we're going to have all these syndromes, and if we repair them incorrectly, we easily create homologically non-trivial paths, right? So we really need to be careful, you know, we know which pair it is. Once we know we can do it, like given we would just say the shortest thing. But the challenge is to say we have a bunch of syndromes lying around, which two of them are a pair, which two of them correspond to the endpoints of the same, like a single connected chain. And that's a challenge. And this is, fortunately, this is a solved problem by some computer scientists, mathematicians, something. And so this is a matching problem that it's, so the matching in the sense that you have two n things and you have one perfect matching, which means you want the edge that covers the, you want each endpoint to be covered by exactly one edge, like kind of our edge chain. An edge, is, which is a subgraph of this bigger one. So if we can do that, we can do it in polynomial time, that's the good news. So we can, there's an algorithm given the weight, we can also minimize the weight, and weight will be, say, the you know, how likely that it is, right? The probability that we can put in this weight for all these different edges. And we can find a perfect matching, so pair up each perfect pair, like just a pairing of these things, such that the total length of the chain is minimized. So the total length of the chain is minimized, and this there's a polynomial time algorithm. So we say we're fine. So we still find chains that connect them in such a way that total is minimized, and so that's still our most likely. And in the limit that p is, and in this case that p is very small, hopefully we'll succeed. And of course, when we succeed exactly, what's the small enough p? That's a question of the threshold of our code, and I'm not really going to talk about it today. But small enough p, I'll just say, you're really okay. And so this is one kind of complication. You have lots of syndromes coming up, and you don't know what to do with them. I mean, you know what to do with them now. But now another complication, these syndromes might not even be right, right? So in real life, you're going to have some probability of error in your measurements. So something that says 1 can become minus 1 and the other way around. So you, in addition to these things, these kind of genuine defects, which we call, we have some, okay, I'm going to just get genuine because we have more types of defect coming in now. They're called, you can have missing defects. That means that it's actually supposed to get, you're supposed to measure minus 1, but you measure 1. So you're going to miss on some chains, like this maybe you didn't see, and this you didn't see. And then you're also possible to have ghost defects. So maybe this one, you read it as minus 1, but it's not actually an error. So it's going to complicate our analysis a lot more, because the whole thing, we want to identify the right endpoints, and then we're fine. But if we have lots of things, we can even have an odd number of abnormal syndromes now, right? Because this can show up, and they don't have to be real. So we can have an odd number, and then so how are we going to deal with it? So we need some new machinery, some extension of this analysis method. So that's going to be we'll use this lattice here. Well, this is not lattice. Lattice is on, yeah, it is lattice. So I'll introduce the time dimension here. So you just repeat measurements as we do with most, when we try to do fault tolerant syndrome measurements, we like to do repeat and repeat until we're sure what we get is right. Whether we're sure, it's very likely that we're right, so we can make it more, so we can allow some kind of probability error in measurements. So let's see. So now I'll describe how to do it. So, and also, when you keep repeating, there will be continually to have error on the qubits, on the data, on the qubits, and also on the measurements. And more accumulates, and nothing is really perfect. But just hopefully, with enough data information, I can recover what actually happened, or with good probability. So, so now I will just write this, and it's kind of cool. Now, each slide still represent our result of measurements by measuring other syndromes. So you could still see bits on, you know, each plane. There we will see defects and, you know, chains like this. New things get created. So between measurements, these are measurements. So this is the time we measure, and this is what happened at each time step. What happened to the qubit? So we could have some X error happening on this qubit here, and some on the later time, there's another. I better draw it like the mine, so I don't have to worry about how to bridge them. So if we have that, we have qubit error here and here, and then and also in maybe later time will be here, and say some random, at different time steps, different error happened on the data. And that's this kind of error happens with probability P at each time step. And now, but we also can have errors on this, on our syndrome bits. So that I denoted by some kind of horizontal link coloring. So now that means that here, I mean, wherever the syndrome bit should be, it got flipped. You just have some mistake in your thing. And so what's this actual syndrome going to look like? It's going to look like, so because if there's no error here, I didn't say this is wrong syndrome bit. So it's going to should indicate the endpoints of the physical error. And this is still the endpoints, because if you have wrong again at this time step, what you have is actually just an error, z error here. So you're going to have the two endpoints are going to be like shrinked a bit. Goes like this, and so you're going to end up with syndrome chains and error chains. So these are our syndrome chains. That means that those are, you know, where minus one shows up in our measurements. And these are where the error happens in our data, and this is where error happens on our syndromes. Oops. So missing defect looks like this, though. So that means that you actually have error on your, this is not missing defect, this is ghost defect. So you could have things like this. You can see syndromes, but the syndrome is errorless, so there's actually nothing. So you notice in 3D, I'm just representing everything on this plane. They're actually more complicated than in 3D. I'm just not drawing. On this, you see that these things form closed chains, like closed loops. So the syndrome chain, which is the green one, the purple one, plus the error chain, will have boundary zero. So that's just say they're all closed up. You know, you can justify it. And then you have this kind of thing. But what you know is just a syndrome. So this is what we know. We want to guess the error chain. That's our challenge. So we're now doing everything in 3D. But the problem is pretty similar, because we have a syndrome chain. since they are form closed things, it just tells me that the boundary of the syndrome chain is the same as the boundary of the air chain. And that's the only information I want to use about S. I don't care whether it goes here or there, but if the endpoint, I want to match with the endpoints of the air chains. And so now, again, we have defects like at these places that we want to annihilate and identify the shortest chain that connects them in this lattice, even though it's a bit anisotropic. So the air probability on horizontal links are P, and whereas the vertical links are Q. So kind of using the same similar kind of strategy, matching pairs of endpoints with, and keeping in mind you want to minimize the length or some kind of weights, we should be able to achieve recovery on, we will have a optimal strategy to recover for things with imperfect measurements. This is kind of the overall picture. And so now I'll just conclude. So today, I hope you get something out of this. I introduced the toric code, which is a family of the surface codes. So another famous member is the planar code, a relative well-known member. And I described recovery procedures, which boils down to analyzing errors and syndromes and, you know, how they, what are the relations between them, because syndromes are what we know and errors are what we want to guess. And I assume here we have fast classical processing, so those matching can be done very quickly, the polynomial time algorithm. So it doesn't really lead to more error because of time, the waiting time. And I assumed in the error model is like independent, uncorrelated, you know, exit errors, or well, it can be very easily generalized to the polarizing error. And then what I neglected today is I didn't go into whole detail of describing the probabilistic things in there. So what are the real probabilities? It gets, you know, more involved, but that kind of gives you the idea why I just justify why I want shorter chains. And the statistical physics model there, it could be pretty interesting for you to look into if you're interested. It has to do with this, you know, different gauge models, and depends on whether you're talking about 2D or 3D, but there's a big wealth of things that you can look into. And also implementation, I'm really like not paying attention to. Even the theoretical attempt to make it more implementable, I didn't really go into, which is, so now I assume that memory is infinite, like, you know, we can store infinite many time slices and can analyze them. But in realistic situations, we probably have a finite time step, so we want to see how do you deal with things when we cannot store all these time slices, right? We don't have the infinite past in front of us. And the planar code, which is a more local, which allows more local measurements, so I'm not discussing here. So all this kind of helping you a little, one step towards implementation. And the gates, or how to implement these, I really didn't talk about today. And of course, I didn't talk too much about anions and excitation in those terms. So, yes, and then. Well, I'm sure you can extend this. So one thing, you can look at higher dimensional codes instead of on 2D. You can look at 4D, and some structure might make it even more tolerant to error intrinsically. So this you need to actually go and, you know, update. Maybe some, if you have go higher dimensional, is more fault tolerant and kind of correct error on their own. Something. So there are more. This is some subclass. Mm-hmm. What's in prime and even and after, what did you say? Not too much. I did see some, it's not that different. I did say that you, I will get pretty ambiguous if yours is happening. Oh yes, that's because I define, it seems like we have L square site operators and L square Flaquette operators. Seems like we have that many, but not all the L square site operators are independent of each other. So one of them can be written as a, you know, product of the other ones, and it's just product. Sure. it's very strange. So we have, you know, let's call them XS with subscript I. So say, let's take the first one, they're L squared. So I will index them from I to 1 to L squared. The equation we have is that XSI, the product of I going through 1 to L squared is the identity. That's satisfied. So that's why one of them can be written as the product of all the other ones. Sorry? Yes, and then the black cat, you have the same relation. So with this one, so you don't have L squared independent black cat operators, you have L squared minus 1. So that takes away another stabilizer generator. So you can encode, so the independent generators, there are L squared minus 2 of them, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What? Okay. On this thing? Okay. So so we have. Let me also talk about on the torus. I think it's. So this is local x on each qubit. You can wrap around the lattice. You will have a lattice like this, you know. And then they kind of wrap around, right? So one of the z's will be z along the primary lattice. So you can just actually a straight, you know, line that goes through. This is called like the primary. When you have this, it's actually a line, a chain in the dual lattice. But what I mean is you have this is your one of your poly operators. I mean, it comes up with 4, and 2 of which are anti-commuting, right? Like they're pairwise anti-commuting. And the one that anti-commutes with this is this thing that acts on the axis. These are axes acting on things going around in the other dimension, the other direction. And the other one we can have, now I have another Z going like, you know, going wrapping around in the other way. But obviously, this Z2, this logical operator, will commute with the green one because they're both XZs. They consist of local Zs and Zs commute. And it will also commute with the Xs because they're like that. So whenever they touch each other, if they intersect at all, there will be even number of links that they share. They don't share links at all because this act on one type of qubits, like horizontal ones, and this acts on the vertical ones or something. So they will commute for sure. So it corresponds to the fact, you know, it kind of says, like they act on different logical fields, they ought to commute anyways. And the other one, the last one is you can have things going this way, I mean, going like that, and that's your logical X. Later, yeah. Yeah, sorry.